We are in 1 Kings chapter 15, studying verse 25 through chapter 16, verse 14. Those of you who recall, last time I talked, I was up here regarding these chapters. We covered a man by the name of King Asa. Do you have any details about his life? A few details, hopefully. There are a few things. Obviously, he had a pretty rotten father, but we won't discuss too much about him. But there's a particular event in his life that led to a somewhat difficult time later on. He covered that there was a particular king of northern Israel called Baasa. Forgive me if I'm not pronouncing it properly. Baasa, 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 whatever you probably want to pronounce it, doesn't make a whole lot of difference to me. He did something. He put up an armory or a fortified city in Asa's town. And so in Asa, of course, did something in response. He went to the king of Syria and said, hey, break your alliance with this guy. Attack northern Israel to get this guy out of my sight. And so that's what he wound up doing. And that was a bad move on his part. God corrected him. And we'll discuss that. We already discussed that at that time. But today we're going to talk about Baasa today. Because there's some details about him and who he was. So in chapter 15, starting verse 25, it goes back in time. Because the first part of chapter 15 of 1 Kings, it basically covers all the way through Asa's life. However, let's go back and discuss what was going on in Israel. So starting in chapter 15, verse 25. Nadab, son of Jeroboam, became king over Israel in the second year of Asa, king of Judah. And he reigned over Israel for 2 years. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He went in the path of his father and his sins, by which he caused Israel to sin. Baasa, the son of Ahijah, of the house of Issachar, conspired against him. And Baasa struck him down at Gibbethon of the Philistines, while Nadab and all of Israel were besieging Gibbethon. Baasa killed him in the third year of Asa, king of Judah, and reigned in his place. It happened when he became king, he struck down the entire house of Jeroboam. He did not leave a soul in the house of Jeroboam until he annihilated it, according to the word of the Lord, which he had spoken through the hand of his servant Ahijah the Shilonite. For the sins of Jeroboam that he committed and caused Israel to commit with his provocations, by which he angered the Lord God of Israel. The rest of the deeds of Nadab and all that he did, behold, they are recorded in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. There was warfare between Asa and Baasa, king of Israel, all their days. In the third year of Asa, king of Judah, Baasa, son of Ahijah, became king over all of Israel at Tizra. And he reigned for 24 years. He did what was evil in the eyes of the Lord. He went to the way of Jeroboam in his sins. He caused Israel to sin. Continuing on in chapter 16. The word of the Lord came to Jehu, son of Hanani, concerning Baasa, saying, inasmuch as I have elevated you from the dirt and emplaced you as ruler over my people, yet you have gone in the path of Jeroboam and have caused my people Israel to sin, to anger me with their sins. Therefore I shall destructively pursue Baasa and his house with annihilation, and I shall make your house like the house of Jeroboam, son of Nebat. Anyone of the house of Baasa who dies in the city, the dogs will eat. Whoever of his dies in the field, the birds of the heaven will eat. The rest of the deeds of Baasa and all that which he did, and his might, behold, they are recorded in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. Baasa lay with his forefathers and was buried in Tizra, and his son Elah reigned in his place. And also through the hand of Jehu, son of Hanani, the prophet, was the word of the Lord concerning Baasa and his house, because all the evil that he had done in the eyes of the Lord, angering him by his own handiwork, by being like the house of Jeroboam, and because he struck Jeroboam's family. In the 26th year of Asa, king of Judah, Elah, son of Baasa, became king over Tizra, ruling for 2 years. His servant, Zimri, commander of half of the chariots, conspired against him. Elah was in Tizra, drinking himself drunk, in the house of Arza, who was in charge of the palace in Tizra. Zimri came, struck Elah down, and killed him, in the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah. And he reigned in his place. It happened when he became king, when he sat upon the throne, he struck down the entire house of Baasa. He did not leave over any male offspring, and all of his relatives and friends. Zimri annihilated the entire house of Baasa in accordance with the word of the Lord, which he had spoken concerning Baasa through the hand of prophet Jehu. Because all the sins of Baasa and the sins of his son Elah, who sinned and caused Israel to sin, angering the Lord, the God of Israel, with their vanities. All the rest of the deeds of Elah and all that he did, behold, they are recorded in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel. So that was 1 Kings chapter 15, from starting verse 25 through chapter 16, verse 14. Obviously, it's discussing the kings of Israel, not the kings of Judah. Now, we've talked about this in the past, that the book of Kings in particular, versus book of Chronicles, we notice there's a lot of duplications in one versus the other one. Book of Kings covers more, focuses more upon the spiritual strengths or weaknesses of the leadership and how it affects the people. Chronicles records more of events. What happened, what didn't happen. What was important to Chronicles is not what was important to the author of the Book of Kings. They're both books, or sections were written at different times. They had different data they were using to compile. So that's what you will see a lot of more information in the Book of Kings about some of them, and a lot of more information, however, in some other kings, some other individuals, in the Book of Chronicles. They all record different information, and sometimes you can glean lots of details from it. Before we cover a whole lot about these men, are there any questions or comments so far regarding these particular individuals that I just read today? We're discussing there's some parallels that you'll notice, obviously, in Baasa plus Jeroboam, and you should notice a few from Solomon, too. Yes, Anne?
I'm a little bit confused. Okay, Asa and Baasa are the same?
No, two different men.
All right, okay.
King Asa, or Asa, I would pronounce it, is the king of Judah.
Okay, and he's the king
of Israel. Yes, he was a good guy. He was a good
Except
guy.
Except maybe one or two.
Asa was a good guy. He wasn't a perfect guy. There were some weaknesses and some screw-ups he made. But in that, we just discussed that when I first started out today, and just talked about it last time I was up here, we're talking about Asa, and that he strived to follow God, and we talked about that I use the term, obviously, for modern-day vernacular. God gave him partial credit, and that he was successful in some of the tasks for the king was supposed to be in, far greater than his father or grandfather were, but not successful in all the tasks given to him. But he was still called a good king, even though he was not successful in everything. Yes, Louise.
Can you give a brief reason how they caused Israel to sin?
Ah, okay. A few chapters earlier in the Book of Kings, it also records this in Chronicles as well. First of all, going back to when Solomon started, do you recall any details regarding what Solomon did and why he fell out of favor with God? So you remember some of them. What all the multiple wives, you talked about that. We actually covered that the four basic rules that all kings must follow, Solomon failed at least three of them. And he persisted in his failure of them. It was the don't trust the military, don't divide your heart, or don't divide your heart into multiple ways for wives or any other direction, and don't oppress people. The fourth task was write a copy of the law for yourself so you will remember and study it continually. Well, Solomon failed in the first three. He successfully did the law. He was quite talented and very knowledgeable individual. He knew the law very, very well. But he did not succeed in the other three. He passed away, and Rehoboam showed up. Rehoboam completely abandoned it. He thought, God, I don't need you. I'm going to do my own thing. Rehoboam followed what Jeroboam did. Now, Jeroboam, when he took the northern 10 tribes away from Solomon, Jeroboam established a new religion. He shifted the holy days. He shifted, in particular, the Sukkot, by a full month later, to put it in the 8th month instead of the 7th, so the people of Israel would not go down to Judah or be redrawn to follow God. He wished to follow him instead. He made himself priest. He got rid of all the priests that God had set up, kicked them all out. They all went down south because they're now in Judah, because he wouldn't allow them to be Levitical priests anymore in the northern tribes. He established the golden calves, which he built with altars. And he made, this is your God. He actually told all of Israel, these calves are your God, the one that brought you out of Egypt. We already know golden calves, of course, was a sin way back in Moses' time. It was a continuation of that. So Jeroboam established that. Jeroboam also established, oh yes, go ahead.
Was Jeroboam the one?
There are more than one king named Jeroboam. I apologize. This is the first Jeroboam. I'm sorry. It's confusing, but names get reused. The only one I think is never reused is Solomon and David. Everybody else reuses their names. So this is the first Jeroboam. So the second one, which is many, many, many years later, that's I think he's the last or one of the last two or three kings of the northern tribes. And that one, we'll deal with that when we get to that guy later. This is the first one that shows up. So he establishes a new religion, establishes not only that, new priests, he establishes a new sexual assignments to those priests, allowing prostitution to show up and be used for a spiritual use. That's what the northern king did. He established them and said, okay, Israel, this is what you now must do. That is the king allowing the people or guiding the people into sin, into paganism. Now, Rehoboam followed Jeroboam's example, brought the exact same details other than, of course, the golden calves, brought all the details of the practices down into, which Solomon has started as well, with the high places and making gods in the various high places for all of his wives and other people. He continued on that process and expanded it in the southern tribes of Judah, though he also allowed made the people of Judah go into sin. So the king and leadership was used to lead the people away from God. So those examples of those two kings. Jeroboam's son, Nadab, was only there for 2 years, but it says, of course, here we read in chapter 15, he continued on in the path that Jeroboam did. So he persisted and said, okay, but yeah, keep on this route. Continue on into this evil way. And we also discussed that Baasa, who then kills Jeroboam's son, Nadab, he also continues and directs Israel, the northern tribes, into this route to continue on the process. So the people in the north, by the time Baasa's done, have been doing it for over 40 years, almost 45 years now. It's a long time. By 45 years, you don't remember a whole lot of what originally was good, and you've now pursued in your path, and that's just how life always has been now for most of the people. So these kings are leaders or guiding their individual or guiding their people into this evil ways. That's how a king influences or directs people of Israel, by just instructing them and facilitating their pagan worship. Does that make sense? Okay. Any other questions or comments? I won't discuss our current president. Not today, at least. Or at least not up here. Privately, maybe. Any comments or questions regarding this topic so far? Okay. Hopefully that was a basic rundown. You get a general idea of how these guys work. Going along the lines, which Louisa just asked about, there's a few details that are right up here on the board. Maybe you'll notice some similarities. Probably you will. These are, 7.5 parallels. 7.5 points. We'll discuss this first one. Turns hearts from God. This is what kings, this is the king which we're dealing with today. Which Jeroboam did it, and Baasa did it, by continuing on in his practices. Now, this is a sequence of events, by the way. These are chronological on how what happened in these kings' lives. So the God declare after the turns hearts from God. So he turns people's heart from God. So then God declares he's going to remove him. So removal. Then God raises someone up. He raises up a particular individual. It may vary from each king to king, but he raises somebody up to actually do the removal. So he raises up, we'll just put a new guy. The king dies naturally. Natural deaths. God doesn't actually kill any of the, you notice that God didn't kill any of these individual kings who were actually causing the problems. It's their sons who die, who are killed by something. But the king themselves, Jeroboam, he died a natural death. Baasa died a natural death. So he dies, a king dies. Well, naturally. I think it's misspelt. Naturally. Any king dies. All these kings, they all die a natural death. This is a sequence of events that goes on in their lives. And then their son takes the reign. I do not know how to spell the word reign. E-I, what was that? R-E-I-G? R-E-I? Thank you. My notes, I spelled it R-I-E-G. So I figured I was spelling it wrong. Yeah, that's the thing. Exactly. Then the son continues in the same path, or in some cases makes it worse. The new guy takes control. And now, takes control. I'm using that very abstractly on purpose because there's different ways in which one can take control. But most in particular, takes control of the tribes. So that's the sequence of events that so far occur. This is where it varies slightly. Whether, that's why I said 7.5, saves or dies. Now, I wrote these up here. Who am I describing? The kings, right? Three kings, actually, I'm talking about. There's Jeroboam. All these sequence of events occur exactly for him. There's Baasa. And there's a third one. Solomon. Notice that? All these events occur the exact same sequence, the exact same way, in all three men. So question, was Solomon any better than these guys?
No.
No, he wasn't. That's why we think of God of David. We don't say he's the God of Solomon. He's the God of David. So all of the men go through this sequence of events. Just shuffle the names around. The sequence stays the same. Now the distinctions occur it's towards the end a little bit. The way in which the new guy takes control of the tribes. Now in the case for Baasa and Jeroboam, he takes control by killing the son, killing Elah or killing Nadab. In Solomon's case, he didn't actually kill Rehoboam. They just took the tribes anyway, through a not quite a civil war, but kind of like a civil war. So that was a different way of taking it. That's the distinction. And the other is the last one. The only reason Solomon didn't die is why. What was the reason why Solomon wasn't killed? For the sake of David. That is the only distinction that the kings, at least the sequence of these men's events, distinguishes these three men. Solomon's upstandingness, the wisdom he has, is not the reason he didn't die. His greatness, whatever his successes were, it isn't the reason. It's only because Solomon was the son of David, and the two are not. So does God look favorably upon these men, all three of them, or not so favorably? Not so favorably. I just want to point this out to you because I think it's interesting that their sequences, how God has compared these men, is very, very similar as far as how the kings described it. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Solomon was an evil individual compared to Jeroboam and Baasa. He did not do to the extreme extent that they did, but he did start the sequence. You're starting it. That's just because you didn't continue to its fullest nth degree, you're still responsible for starting it. And he also did some good things too. Don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to jump on him as being a bad guy. He wasn't necessarily a bad person. I'm discussing some of his failures, and which is what Kings talks about a lot regarding the individual's failures. Because what do these failures lead to? They lead to failures in the people. The citizens fail. The Israelites fail. They go down a bad path. How many of you have ever been lied to about God? Who hasn't been? You ever misled about God? Who hasn't been? Everybody's been misled, lied to about him. Something that we thought was true and found out if we grew up or learned something, oops, that wasn't true. Leadership has a great power over individuals. It does. And so a king is held to a very high standard. There's another topic I want to talk about this. So basically you guys got this subject, as far as the comparison of all three kings, pretty well done. It makes fairly good sense, right? We notice all these things continue on in each of their cases. There's a distinction, though, that I want to focus a little bit of attention on in Baasa. We'll discuss Zimri shortly, which is how this sequence of events stops. Because it's just these three kings that go through this sequence. There's something else in the book of Kings, in chapter 16, that talks in particular about Baasa, which I don't know if you've noticed that or paid too much attention to it, but it's a distinction. Starting at verse 7. This is a description as far as the reasons as to why he was destroyed with Elah as well. The hand of Jehu, the son of Hanani, the prophet, was the word of the Lord concerning Baasa and his house. Because of all the evil that he had done in the eyes of the Lord, angering him by his own handiwork, by being like the house of Jeroboam, and because he struck Jeroboam's family. It's that "and because he struck" that will grab your attention to. Back in chapter 14, when Jeroboam's death sentence for his family is declared upon him, was that God's instruction? Was there a prophecy from God? Let's go back there real quick. I mean, did God say this was going to happen to you? Let's see, this is in chapter 14, in verse 10. "Therefore, behold," this is, by the way, this is the Shilonite, which is chapter 16 references. This is the man who spoke to Jeroboam's wife. "Therefore, behold, I am bringing evil upon the house of Jeroboam. I shall eliminate every male offspring from Jeroboam and all property, whether hidden or in public of Israel. I shall destructively pursue the house of Jeroboam as one completely consumes food until it is waste. Any of the house of Jeroboam who dies a city, the dogs will eat. Who dies a field, the birds of heaven will eat. The Lord has spoken." So, is that a prophecy or a declaration from God? Most would argue yes. Ahijah is obviously a prophet. He's discussing, and it is. I'm not arguing it's not. So Jeroboam, that was chapter 14, starting in verse 10. Go from verse 10 through verse, where was it? I just turned the page. Hold on a minute. 11? For 10 and 11? Yeah. Yeah, 10 and chapter 11. What was that? What was your question? Ahijah the Shilonite. He was a somewhat older, but not too old, prophet during the time he was alive and was existent while Solomon was king over all of Israel. He lived through the Civil War portion, and of course into Jeroboam's fairly early, not completely dearly, reign as being the new king and how much he is led, and he's built the calves and everything. So this is Ahijah is talking to Jeroboam's wife because Jeroboam's son got greatly ill and was dying, and he was informing her that this is from God, you're going to die, your son, you won't see him alive. When you return, wife, whatever, I forgot her name, I don't think I actually records her name, when you return, when you enter the city, he'll be dead. So you won't see him again. And that's with the declaration, because Jeroboam was such an awful human being. So Ahijah made the declaration, which of course is repeated to Baasa, and not exactly verbatim, but very, very, very similarly, meaning that as far as kings is concerned, these two men are the same man, just a different name, as far as the way in which they conducted their lives. So Jeroboam goes to the sequence, and he is told, or rather, is prophesied against from God to die. Him and his whole family. And this is what question I want to bring to you. In chapter 16, when this event actually occurs with Baasa, this is in in verse 28. Baasa killed him in the third year, he reigned, he did not leave a soul in the house of Jeroboam until he united it all. Was Baasa doing God's will or his own? The prophecy was to die, God was going to raise someone up, and Baasa is the one who did it. And presumably he's following God's will. He's following the way God said, hey, I'm going to raise somebody up. He's going to pursue, not correction, God didn't say raise somebody up. God said he would pursue for destruction, that your family, your entire existence would be pursued. So Baasa fulfills a prophecy for Jeroboam. So Baasa obeys God. Yes, Anne? What was that?
What about motive?
We'll discuss that, hopefully. But that's only a small part of it, because we'll discuss something else regarding this topic, because there's a lesson in here that it's an important one to get out of these men's lives. He is obeying God, but in verse 7 of chapter 16, it says something in particular, as the latter half. Because of all the evil that he had done in the eyes of the Lord, angering the Lord by his own handiwork, by being like the house of Jeroboam, and because he struck Jeroboam's family. He obeys God's prophecy, but one of the reasons he's killed is for obeying God's prophecy. For doing all of this. Not the only reason he was killed, but one of the reasons cited. Is that right? Yes, Jeff.
Given some of the prophecies that's come about by some of the powers that were brought up to take down Israel, such as Cyrus, Nebuchadnezzar, etc., that would suggest that, yes, they did the right thing, but they did it in the wrong way, or they went too far.
Right. That's what you would, gather from it. Now, as far as in the case of Baasha and Jeroboam, how he killed Jeroboam and his family, nothing was wrong with that necessarily, because God declared, you and all the males will be wiped out. There will be any male left of your descendants. So Baasha fulfilled that part. We won't discuss Zimri, because Zimri went beyond Baasha's condition, but he didn't live long. So Baasha fulfilled that part. Was it the right, since what he did, I mean, the fact that Jeroboam certainly died, that couldn't be the problem, that was part of the prophecy. What was it, or what is it, that God would strike or be upset about Baasha for what he did? Why is it partially, or part of the reason, why is it partly cited here? Well, to figure this out, you have to go back in time, before Baasha was born. What other king didn't do this? No, well, sort of Saul. Actually, it was David. God could have killed Jeroboam's family any way he imagined. That's God's prerogative. He could have raised anyone to do it. That wasn't the point. If Baasha did anything proper as far as God was concerned, if he had read anything about what David went through or learned anything about what David went through, what did David do when he was given this opportunity? When David was fleeing Saul many, many times, Saul literally fell into his hands. David, being fully known, as well, not only by him, by everybody else, that he was the next anointed king, he was the rightful heir, he was given the opportunity to kill Saul and kill Saul's family. He could have easily done so. But David made a distinction. He says, no, I will not kill a man that God has put over Israel. Not only did he not kill a man, he instructed all of his men, you are not allowed to attack or kill any of Saul or his family, because God put them over Israel. They are an anointed, as David pointed, the anointed of Israel. You cannot kill them. Not only did David do that, when the man came from, I forgot the name of the town off the top of my head, came to David to inform him that Saul died. And he said, how do you know he's dead? They might as well. I was going on the field gathering stuff, and I saw the man was up there. He called me, told me to thrust him through because he was laying on his sword, not dead. So the man thrust him through and then came to David to make sure Saul was dying anyway, to make a difference. Not only was David upset by that, he killed the man for it. So David actually executed the man that was obeying King Saul's command, because he obeyed King Saul's command by killing the anointed of God. David had a distinction, said, wait a minute, just because Jeroboam, imagine for a moment that David was in Baasha's position. Jeroboam's been prophesied that someone's going to come up and kill him and all of his family. That doesn't necessarily mean it has to be you. How did Saul and his family die? The Philistines. Did David have to do it? No. It was on God's time. So in Baasha's actions, in his harsh actions for Jeroboam, he was not using the lessons that we already know came from David. Is it just because you are the next king, or wish to be the next king, in Baasha's case, doesn't mean you are the man to go kill off and fulfill the prophecy given to you. God could have chosen anyone. So if Baasha was a good king, what should he have done? Or what could he have done? Follow David's example. And wait. Resist, do whatever you wish to do, but wait. Be patient. God will take care of it. So hence, in 1 Kings, when it discusses chapter 16, and it cites the multiple reasons why Baasha was then killed later on, by God, because God was angry with him, he said to him, not because he obeyed God's prophecy, but because he obeyed God's prophecy. Meaning, he did it himself. David didn't do it himself. David waited. David was a proper king. He was a man of God's own heart for a reason. David followed a good example. Yes, Tammy. But Basa did not.
I think that one thing that a king like David and then maybe someone like George Washington had in common is that they knew that whatever they did was going to set a precedent for the future. And so David, like you said, could have killed Saul.
Easily.
Easily, on at least one occasion, if not more, he had a chance, an opportunity, and he refused to do so because if he had done so, then he would have set up a pattern of behavior that anyone following him could have used him as an excuse to follow in the same behavior, if not worse.
Right.
So he refused to go that way because he didn't want the future generations to use him as an excuse to do that to him or his family, because he didn't want to do that to someone else's family. And same thing with Basa, even though he knew that, he probably knew or had heard about this edict from this prophet.
It was common knowledge at the time, yeah. Yeah.
But he, rather than putting it upon himself, saying, yeah, God, I'll do it for you, then he set up that pattern that later on Zimri comes along and does the same thing to him.
Yep.
Because he did the same thing to him. So you can't expect better behavior, people to treat you better than you treated someone else.
Right.
And so that set up this pattern of, and you see it all through Israel, actually.
It continues. Yeah, the northern tribes continue on this,
kind of pattern.
This pattern of execution and payback. Yes, Anne?
I think another point about this is at some point along the way, David said he wouldn't kill the anointed of God.
Right.
Okay, and the office of being the king, you know, well, although there's no honor anymore, you know.
Modern day, we're not discussing.
Right. So, but that idea of the anointed of God, and also in St. Paul saying, I would never slap the face of the anointed of God.
Right. For God's the chief priest at the time, I think. It was chief priest or Sanhedrin. Yes, there's the chief priest.
That's another
thing. It's the same principle, though. It's the same principle, same example. That God placed these men in their position. Jeroboam and his family was actually placed, anointed by God to be this particular task. It is not Basa's instruction or decree or blessing to go against God's anointed. Whether or not God's anointed deserved death wasn't the discussion. Whether or not God's anointed deserved the prophecy to be killed by somebody isn't part of the discussion. Basa was not the man to do that. He went beyond his bounds, beyond what David would have done. So as an example of, we have an example of a king who did the wrong choice, contrast to an example of a king in the exact same scenario, doing the right choice. It's a good example for us. The prophecies against somebody, for example, I use this loosely, prophecies against a particular Arab nation, for example, or maybe against the future or the past, it's not our responsibility to fulfill or facilitate that one way or the other. It's strictly God's. And God will fulfill the timing. Against Israel or against Egypt, against anybody. Makes no difference. It's God's timing, not man's. So when man takes upon himself, as it points out in chapter 16, his own handiwork in verse 7, and by being like the house of Jeroboam, and because he struck Jeroboam's family, those are the three things that Basa was penalized against regarding God. Those are all the same details that he did it by his own choice. Just because he was fulfilling God's word in the way God said it, doesn't mean he was doing right. It just means that he was the one doing it. Right. God did not instruct Basa. God, unlike, for example, which is the great next example, which I wasn't going to talk to, but I will talk about it anyway. There's another general that shows up named Jehu. Jehu. Haha, yes. Jehu. He is King Jehoram, if I get the pronounce it right. General. Jehoram is the son of Ahab. He is actually gone to by a prophet with oil, dumps on his head, and the prophet from Elisha tells him, your job, Jehu, go kill Jehoram and all of his descendants. That is a distinction. That is a separation. Different from Jeroboam, Basa, or even David. Jehu was separated. God didn't just say, something's going to happen to you, Ahab, or Ahab's descendants. I am particularly selecting one individual to go do this. Was Jehu punished for it? No. Why? He was fulfilling exactly what God instructed him to go do. He fulfilled it exactly the way he wanted it done. God actually brought all these individual people at the right moment in time, to coming across who's passing. Who are you? Well, yeah, this is for Ahab. Oh, guess what? You're dead. It was a convenient little sequence of events for his life. They didn't even have to go into Judah to do it. All the people God brought to him. So that's a distinction, a separation, that he was actually not only obeying God's law or God's prophecy, he's actually obeying God's instruction on how to do it too. Versus Baasa was not. And Zimri, of course, was not, who killed Elah, Baasa's son. Now, I didn't want to discuss Zimri too much today, although I stopped at verse 14, so we don't discuss what happens to Zimri. But he only reigns for a week and he dies. So the sequence of events, which is what I'm going to conclude with, the sequence of events for these particular three kings, Solomon, Jeroboam, and Baasa, you notice that all, I wrote earlier, all their sequence of events in their lives matched. Their current, how they did, what they did, the sequence which God took them out, removed territory from them, they all matched. So, what stops it? What stopped the cycle of repetition? Of failed kings having their sons wiped out, and a new king coming on the scene. Something has to stop it. You have three consecutive kings do the exact same thing. Another nation? No, doesn't happen that way. What stopped the sequence? Zimri. God. Zimri's actions stopped it. Zimri stopped the pattern. So Zimri fulfills the same prophecies, but he goes to the next extreme. Not only did he kill Baasa and all of his family, he killed all their family's friends. He went the next nth degree past that. Not only did he do that, he did it without the backing of the military, which we won't discuss that today. They were like, who are you? And so, how do you get rid of that king? Do you kill the next king that God set up? Is that the next sequence? Well, if you're killing the next king, all you're doing is continuing on the pattern. So how does that king, how does the pattern stop? The pattern stops the hand of God. In this case, which we haven't read about yet, the pattern stops by Zimri killing himself. Which is fitting. That's how you stop a pattern. It stops with you. Stop a curse, stops with you. So I'll give Zimri a teeny speck of a hint of thought about credit in what his choice of suicide rather than continuing on the pattern. Any questions or comments regarding this topic? I like these men, not for what they did, but for what the example they show us. They show us examples that we can contrast against David and Solomon and see what a good king does and the exact same scenario, what a bad choices are. So not only does God give us the tree of good, but he also gives the tree of bad too. We know what the good path is, but here's examples of the bad paths too. There's an example of virtually every law ever written in the entire Torah, somewhere in the Bible discussing someone breaking it, and the consequences that come to it. So there are good things to learn from, and that's how we learn them. We learn what breaking it results in. That's complete destruction. Did any of the kings succeed in any of these tasks? The individual kings themselves, Jeroboam and Baasa, lived their whole lives and died. So that God didn't put it upon them. He put it upon their families. And we'll discuss that today. That's part of the topic probably next time, because it has to do with Zimri and Omri, which we'll discuss that when that happens. Any questions or comments? Yes, Carrie.
It's kind of, to me, it just seems like a matter of, you know what God's going to do, but you don't take it into your own hands to fulfill it. And actually, where my mind went with it was, these are kings, yes, but you know, we talk a lot about being in training for being kings and priests. This is something really easy to apply to our personal life with friends and family because, you know, we walk around and we do things ourselves and it's very easy to see when somebody else is kind of walking a line that's a little bit the wrong way and maybe they're complaining about something that's happening and you can see the straight line of, well, if you weren't doing this, then that wouldn't be happening. And it can be very easy to just, you know, say something like that. Right. And it's more of a, we think we're doing it to help people, but a lot of times it more comes from a need to feel like we're the one that knows what God's will is.
Right.
And be able to say it. And
almost like a self-importance type of idea.
Yeah, which, you know, these men
all believe that.
Their own, they achieved being a ruler.
Right, right, right.
By carrying out the acts that they did. So, you know, I just thought, well, it's good to know as somebody that might be a judge someday. You know, keep your mouth shut until God says, Carrie, go open your mouth.
Right, and go do it yourself. Exactly. Wait for the proper timing. What I wanted to get out of this topic today was that just because a prophecy of something bad or whatever God intends to do to someone or something doesn't mean that his laws don't apply. It doesn't mean that, oh, well, I'm going to exempt you, individual A, from these set of laws so that you can go do this. It doesn't work that way. The laws are fast. They stay the same consistently. Your deviation is your path that you're on. And your job is to deviate that path back to where it belongs. But the deviation doesn't get forgotten about unless you address it and fix it. These men purposefully did not address their deviations. They desired, because Baasa was warned by the prophet, hey, stop it. And what did he do? Nothing. He continued on. Jeroboam was warned. Stop it. What did he do? Continued on. These men continued on the path, even though they were fully aware, made aware that they have deviated too far. You can't deviate that far and not address the issues. Because the laws of God don't change. People do, but the laws don't. Is it Louise? Yes.
Yeah, I find it very comforting. In the last few weeks, I've been hearing kind of in the spirit that every individual is subject to the laws, and it'll catch up with you eventually. And so when I look at rulers of this day that are very, 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 you know, perverted and there's so much corruption, it's very comforting to know each person will be subject
addressed
to the laws.
Right.
And so in time, you know, and it's helped me too. Keep my mouth shut when it comes to, you know, being with my children and watching them stray around and do what they do. That, you know, I mean, really, I know that even what I say is, you know, may fall on deaf ears. They'll reap what they sow. We all do.
Or they address it. I mean, they can turn. They turn back. Any one of these kings could have said, oops.
Yeah.
I want to go back. I want to correct this.
Yeah, what you said about waiting for the right time.
The time which God says, here is, now is time, or is carried, whatever. Talking to you, okay, now you go do it, versus not doing it.
Yeah.
Very few of us get a you go do it from God's ear.
Yeah.
Or to our ear, I should say.
It's important to wait and feel and sense.
He'll do the timing. It's his timing, not yours. Just be patient. And don't deviate, don't break the law to accomplish what you think is his will. That's not the goal. Any questions or comments regarding this topic? There's a lot of lessons from these kings, good and bad ones, which we'll learn more as we go continue on. What Zimri and Omri do, we'll discuss that, and of course, King Ahab later. Any other questions or comments?
I have to study this. This is almost foreign to me. I know that today we were talking about the kings of Jeroboam. Rehoboam separated himself. I always thought Jeroboam was pretty good.
No, not really. You learn more about who they were. That's not uncommon. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a critique on any individual. It's not uncommon for the lack of knowledge to break you, meaning to make you realize, oops, I was pursuing the wrong route. I didn't understand, didn't know. God had these things written down for us to study and remember and learn from. Making mistakes happens all the time. We all do that. Things we didn't know or oops, didn't see that before, whatever happens to be in the scriptures. These kings and these individuals and all the laws and all the stories written here are for our learning. So learn them well. Because if you are one day a king or a judge or a priest, you don't want to make the decisions that Baasa and Jeroboam do. You make the ones that David did. So you have to know what the distinctions are. What is the point behind one action, course of events, versus the other? Because both men, David and Baasa and Jeroboam, all eventually accomplished God's will. They just went totally different routes to do it. And David was patient and waited for God to do it, not his own hand. That's what matters.